Hey, everybody. Host Nora McInerney is back for season two of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has a real conversation with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they took action to understand this disease. So jump into the conversation for season two, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, and learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter our offer code STUFF at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. This is Charles F. B. Chuck Bryan. There's Jerry. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
You intro'd as if you were asleep, and I just walked by and poked you with a pool cue. And that's your first thing you do is you wake up and just go, hey, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, that's what I do.
How are you, sir?
Man, I'm feeling fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
Feeling fine. That's a Simpsons reference.
From what?
The Shining one.
Oh, yeah, The Shining.
Uh-huh.
Classic.
It's a good one.
So, a couple of quick matters of business.
Okay.
A little COA at the beginning.
Yes.
We're talking about freak shows.
Right.
And we will be saying freaks and things like that.
Yeah.
That is obviously an antiquated term.
Yes.
But there are a lot of quotes in here and a lot of references to freaks and midgets and pinheads and all these awful terms
right.
that they used to call these people that had, you know, physical deformities and maladies.
Right.
So it's not us speaking. This is a in historical context.
Yeah, like we get the insensitivity.
Yeah.
Right, and so we're not being insensitive here.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And we want to shout out a few we used a couple of HowStuffWorks articles. As well as one from History Magazine by Laura Grande. Priceonomics, Zachary Crockett wrote one. And
Who I have to say, I'm a fan of that dude's work.
Yeah, it was a good article.
Priceonomics, he's written some really interesting articles.
Agreed. And then one from humanmarvels.com, which is just a good website, by Jay Tithonus Pednow. I know that's not pronounced right. Pednaud.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Pednow?
Yeah.
I assume the D is silent.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe it's Pednowd.
Pednowd.
Pednow.
Pednowd. Huh. Freaky.
And a couple of other places we visited. So, and everyone kind of says the same thing, but it's a nice, well-rounded thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about the history of freak shows, and there's only, you know, one history.
Yeah.
Certain things happen. And we found very quickly that, like, you can't extract, freak shows from P.T. Barnum or vice versa.
No.
Like, they are inextricably bound. But freak shows, you know, Barnum was working in the 19th century, but the concept of freak shows, which, is basically someone who is a human curiosity, and that could be someone who was born with a genetic deformity, physical deformity, some sort of mental incapacity, or some people have turned themselves into human curiosities, say through the wonder of tattooing or learning to swallow swords or something like that.
Yeah, or like these days, body modification, like the Jim Rose
right.
show.
Or there's one in Coney Island still that does a traditional show.
Yeah, Sideshow by the Seashore.
Right.
Also, a great song by Luna.
Nice.
One of my favorite bands.
So the whole concept of this, of having a human curiosity and basically charging gawkers to look at it, it dates back quite a ways. Well, actually, not that far. The 16th century.
That's pretty far.
I guess so, but you would think, like, well, the Greeks or the Romans did this. But apparently, no. Everybody was fairly, from what I understand, everybody just kind of steered clear of human curiosities to that point.
Yeah, I think people feared them.
Right.
They were locked away mainly because they thought it was some evil curse.
Or punishment from God.
Yeah.
And this wasn't someone you wanted to consort with, else you might bring down the wrath of God upon yourself.
That's right. But like you said, in the late 1500s, people started to say, you know what? I'm curious about someone with hair growing all over their face.
I'm curious about the human curiosity.
Exactly.
And I don't think it's coincidence that about this time, science was starting to spread throughout Europe.
Oh, sure.
So the idea that this was God's wrath was taking a bit of a backseat to this is a human condition of some sort.
Yes, but not so far down the road of science to where there was this intermediate period where they were gawked at.
Right.
And as we'll find out later, science would eventually take part in ending the sideshows.
Right. It created them and it ended them.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
Good way to look at it. So one of the first viewings or one of the first people put on display, and, you know, this is also going to be we'll get into it later, but the morality of this is very up and down with exploiting people.
Yeah.
And these people that would normally be locked away actually having super lucrative careers.
Sure.
Long lasting, made them rich.
Well, plus
in many
also,
cases.
I think one of the authors, I think it was Crockett, points out that, early on, if you were in a freak show, there was a good chance that, you had been abandoned by your parents.
Oh, yeah.
Became a ward of the state. And adopted by somebody who just ruthlessly exploited you.
Yeah.
And maybe barely took care of you.
Yeah.
But one thing you can definitely say to his credit, as Barnum came into it and basically normalized or created an industry out of freak shows or for freak shows, conditions definitely changed and the exploitation seems to have lessened somewhat.
Yeah, I think with the big names like Norman and Barnum, I think there were all manner of minor sideshows that probably didn't treat them as well.
Right. And usually Barnum and Norman bought their curiosities from those minor sideshows, lesser
true.
Showmen.
Exactly. So we're talking about Tom Norman out of England.
Yeah, they were basically counterparts.
Yeah, and we'll get into them. But
okay.
Back to one of the earliest quote-unquote freaks was a man named Lazarus Colorado, not Colorado, who was a conjoined twin. He had a brother, Johannes, mm-hmm. who was upside down on his chest.
And technically he was a parasitic twin to Lazarus.
Oh, not conjoined twins?
They were conjoined, but Johannes, like, didn't eat.
Oh, okay.
He didn't speak. He never opened his eyes. And apparently the only way you could get a physical reaction out of him was if you rubbed his chest, it would make him squirm.
Like Quaid in Total Recall.
Very much.
Gotcha. So he went on tour, performed before King Charles I in the early 1640s. But it was not a big deal. It wasn't a super lucrative. Sideshows weren't really a thing at that point.
Still. No, but this guy was saying, you guys are going to ostracize me? Well, I'm going to charge you to look at me then, and I'm going to support myself and my brother doing this.
Yep.
So he did it himself. It's not clear whether he worked with a manager or not or a promoter, but he definitely made his own choice to go do this.
Yes, exactly.
And he was apparently an otherwise handsome man.
Yeah.
That's how everyone described him.
Right.
Which I think probably for the court or Europe who came and looked at him probably just made it even more mind-boggling, you know. But he's such
sure.
a good guy.
Right, right.
You know?
P.T. Barnum, and I think we should do a whole podcast on P.T. Barnum at some point.
Okay.
To really close out the circus suite.
Well, then we shouldn't mention him again.
In this show? No. Barnum, as a teenager, he always had a penchant for making money.
He was one of those magnates.
Sort of weird ways. He ran his own lottery as a teenager in Connecticut, and he said, here's what I'll do. I can just sell these tickets. I'll give out prizes in varying levels from $25 on down to like 25 cents.
Sure.
And
a lottery.
And, but it was very well thought out for a teenager. He wasn't just like, just one prize. He spread it out so he would entice people to play more.
Right.
And he actually made a lot of money from it until they outlawed the lottery.
Yeah, he was making like 11 grand in today's dollars a week.
As a teenager.
Yeah, at 19.
Not bad. But then Connecticut and the rest of the country said, no, more lotteries for now. We'll bring that back up later, though. Don't you worry.
TBC.
And he had to find other ways to make work. Moved to New York City. And in 1835, he had, you know, England is where a lot of this started. And we'll talk about Norman in a second.
Yeah.
But he got his cue from England and said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy a person. I'm going to buy my first freak, this blind, paralyzed slave woman. And this is a hallmark of freak shows, is I'm going to make up a story about her that's sensational and crazy, like a Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of thing.
Right. And Barnum in particular was well known for just taking these things to the nth degree. Like,
sure,
no one's going to buy that, but he could sell it in such a way that people believed it because they were exponentially dumber back then.
The story for her was that she was 160 years old, was George Washington's nurse, and you can pay to see her, when in fact she was only 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She was half that age.
Yeah, and her name was Joyce Heth.
Yeah, she was just an old lady, right?
Yeah, she was an old slave woman who was paralyzed and blind and was being exploited by P.T. Barnum in the year before her death.
That's right.
So she dies, but before then, like, as he's touting her as this 160-year-old former nursemaid to George Washington, that gets an initial reaction, and then ticket sales drop. And then P.T. Barnum did something quite smart. He wrote an anonymous letter to a Boston newspaper and accused himself of being a fraud and saying that the 160-year-old woman was a fake, that she was actually a machine, a robot made of whale skin and wood, and ticket sales went right through the roof again.
Man, what a guy. There should be a good movie about him.
I can't believe there's not.
Like a modern one. I'm sure there is, you know.
Surely, like, what's the one, The Greatest Show on Earth was a movie, right? Isn't that like a D.W.
Yeah.
Griffith movie or something
like
that?
Yeah, that's what I mean. But, like, Tom Cruise should play him.
Yeah, and it should be directed by Michael Bay.
Russell Crowe should. No, not Russell Crowe.
Well, how about, who could play P.T. Barnum? You know who he would be good at it, but it'd just be so him? Sam Rockwell.
Oh, totally. He could play anything.
So I'd rather see somebody even broader playing him.
Yeah.
I heard recently.
Oh, Gina. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Gina, who would end up playing him is friggin' Hugh Jackman. And everyone would just say,
oh, God, man.
Of course.
Yeah. Cause he can do cartwheels.
Yeah. What were you gonna say?
It might have been during the Bill Gates interview or something yesterday that somebody said that. No, it was on CNN. Tom Hanks is the most trusted person in America.
What?
Like, for some poll found that, like, the most trusted person in America is Tom Hanks.
Were we on the list?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
Sure, you gotta trust Tom
Hanks. We're not even also Rands. We're never Rands.
All right. So, he purchased that woman. What was her name?
Joyce Heth. J-O-I-C-E-H-E-T-H.
For $1,000, and he made about that every week, from exploiting her.
I imagine that she got very little of that.
Yeah.
Although you can't necessarily say that. I didn't see what she was paid.
True.
She was very likely paid, and she was probably fairly well taken care of, especially considering that she probably just, and this is based on how Barnum treated other people later.
Yeah.
In a documented manner. But I don't want to say he rescued her from slavery, because she went from being a slave to being owned by somebody who exhibited her.
Sure.
But it's not a guarantee or a given that her situation got worse after she was purchased by Barnum.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Man, that felt like a minefield I was walking through, talking about slavery, human exploitation,
yeah.
A blind woman who is also paralyzed.
Yeah.
Good
luck, sir. His first big hoax after that, I guess it wasn't a hoax aside from the made-up story, but he had a real hoax.
Yeah, that was a hoax.
Well, a hoax, sure.
Sure.
But this was a hoax in 1842 that, because it was nothing about it was real. He was promoting something called the Fiji Mermaid, which was basically rogue taxidermy is all it was.
That's exactly what it was.
It was a creature with a head of a monkey and the tail of a fish that he bought from Japanese sailors.
Well, he didn't. He got it from a sailor who bought it from Japanese.
Oh, right.
And actually, it was Japanese fishermen.
Yeah, and he, well, what's the difference?
Well, they're like traditional, they didn't necessarily go to sea. They were like islanders.
Gotcha.
And this is like traditional art for them, folk art.
Okay. So not a sailor, but fisherman.
Right.
That's pedantry 101.
Sorry, man. I get so fixated on things.
Yeah. And he leased it, for $12.50 a week, $12.50.
Right.
From the owners of said rogue taxidermy. And he printed up pamphlets and tried to convince everyone it was some real thing.
So he actually had a partner named Levi. What was Levi's name? He's definitely an overlooked guy. Levi Lyman. Can you imagine like being P.T. Barnum's partner? Like you'd never be in the spotlight, right?
No way.
So Levi Lyman posed as a English doctor, a scientist who was in possession of this mermaid. And P.T. Barnum very publicly was trying to get his hands on the mermaid, and this guy was very publicly resisting him because it was a man of science, and this was the real deal.
Right.
And it helped just convince everybody, including the newspapers, that, like, this is the genuine article.
Man, just rubes. a nation, a world of rubes,
yeah.
It seems like. He ended up opening up a museum on Broadway in New York City in the 1840s. You know, sort of, you know, like a Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of thing. Curiosities and weird things.
Yeah.
That was his stock and trade. And then we should talk about his counterpart in England.
Tom Norman?
Yeah, Tommy Norman. Tommy Norman. He was named the Silver King, and Barnum actually gave him that name, apparently, after meeting him. And he said, boy, what a huge silver, showy silver watch you have there. You're the Silver King.
He goes, I am the Silver King. I've been waiting my whole life for somebody to notice.
Exactly. So he was doing the same thing in England.
And he actually, he toured with Joseph Merrick, the Elephant Man.
Yeah, and he got castigated by a lot of people saying you're exploiting this guy, John Merrick. And
is it John or Joseph?
What did I say, John?
Yeah, and it's Joseph. Like an ongoing thing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I can't remember if it's, well, let's find out.
No, it's Joseph for sure. I just misspoke.
Oh, sorry.
He was attacked in specifically in a memoir by Dr. Frederick Treves called The Elephant Man and Other Reminiscences. And he shot back and he said, you know what? I haven't mistreated Merrick. I haven't abused him. He wasn't forced to do anything. And he said, in fact, the big majority of showmen are in the habit of treating their novelties as human beings and in a large number of cases as one of their own, not like beasts.
Right.
So, you know, the morality battle was being waged even back then.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about, this time when people would go look at people who had physical deformities and pay for it.
Yeah.
Just look at them just standing there. You think, well, the whole world was pretty evil and amoral.
Sure.
At the time. Not necessarily true. There's a lot of people who railed against this stuff, like Frederick Treves.
Yeah.
Who was, he was portrayed by, Anthony Hopkins, right? Isn't that him?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, he was. In The Elephant Man, the movie.
Oh, was he actually Merrick's doctor?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that movie. Oh.
Yeah, David Lynch.
God, one of the best ever. And then there was an historian who at the time, I think in like the 1860s, he wrote, his name was Henry Mayhew, and in 1861, he was British, he wrote that, that these freak shows were nothing more than human degradation. And he said something that stuck out to me, Chuck. He said that the men who preside over these infamous places know too well the failings of their audience. And I think he really hit the nail on the head by, he wasn't accusing the showmen, because I think he understood that most of these people were just under contract.
Right.
And he wasn't accusing the people, the actual human curiosities, the freaks themselves. He was rightly placing the blame for all this on the observers, the gawkers.
Right. Like if there wasn't a market for it, they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. Like you're the one who is having the moral failing, who's paying to go see this person who may or may not be exploited. You don't know.
Yeah.
And it's really on you, audience.
Yeah. It's pretty it's a lot of foresight for back then.
I thought so too. So it's not like, the point was, it's not like everybody was just going along with this. People have had a problem with it basically the whole time
right.
freak shows were around.
Right. All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll talk a little bit more about, the evolution of the sideshow right after this.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
We're back.
I brought my pencil.
What's that? Oh, Van Halen.
Give me something to write on, man.
I didn't get that at first.
I'm impressed that you did get it.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was from Van Halen's popular song, Hot for Teacher.
Yeah, from 1984.
And we are now 1980s DJs.
Right.
So the sideshows became a legitimate thing, a big way to make money. There were different kinds. There was one called a 10-in-1 show, which I believe the sideshow by the seashore is today.
Whoa.
I know.
You did it.
Through my missing tooth. And that is when you have 10 people on display on a platform at once and people just walk by and look at them.
Yes.
It's not like a performance.
No.
It's just, there's a bearded lady, there's the dog face boy, there's the tattooed man.
Right.
And they're all just standing there.
Yep.
That's a 10-in-1.
Like, get your look, you yokel.
They had things, and this was all to drum up more money. They would advertise something as a adults only or a man only even performance.
Right. Well, the men only performance frequently had a stripper.
Well, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Or stuff that they thought that were just like a woman shouldn't see or children shouldn't see.
I don't know if it was as much of that as if it was to just trump up like, oh my God, it's so bad that a woman can't see, lay her eyes upon it.
I see.
I think it was all part of the show. That's my feeling, at least. One of the things that they displayed was something called a pickled punk, which is awful. It is.
Especially when you find out what it is.
Yeah, it's basically an abnormal fetus in a formaldehyde in a jar.
Yep.
And you could go by and look at pickled punks and gawk at them for money. It's awful.
Yeah, this is what people did, like on Saturday nights in Kansas. So, the sideshows or the freak shows, at first they were, you would be some enterprising entrepreneur in some small town, and you would notice that a little youngster had a third leg.
Okay.
And your thought was, I can really make some money with this kid.
Sure.
So you go to their parents and you'd say, I will give you 20% of all of the earnings of your child if you let me take him on the road, and he will stay in the finest hotels and wear the best clothes. And,
yeah, as the human tripod.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he will become famous and the world will love him. Just let me handle it. I'm going to be his manager from now on. And the parents would very frequently, especially if they were poor, would say, that's great.
Yeah.
Do that. Give me some money up front, though, by the way.
Yeah, especially because a lot of times some of these people were a burden on their family.
Sure.
Because of their health condition.
Yep.
So they were happy to be rid of them. It's all very sad.
Okay, so that's how it definitely started out. And it went on like that for a very long time as well. But once Barnum and Norman and some of the other guys, the big guys, came around, they would just basically keep an eye out for that kind of thing, or they would be approached
right.
by these guys who would essentially be middlemen. But it, kind of like somebody who discovered a boy band selling their contract to a bigger record company. But this was with human curiosities, people with the third leg or hypertrichosis or what
right.
have you. And then Barnum would take them and would just take whatever exaggerated origin story that they came with and just throw it out and come up with one 10 times more.
Yeah.
George Washington's nursemaid, Joyce Heth, died.
Yeah, who was not George Washington's nursemaid.
Right. He started looking around for his next collaborator, if you could call him that. And he found out that he had a distant cousin, a fifth cousin, named Charles Stratton, who had stopped growing when he was about 2 years old.
Yeah, he never completely stopped. He grew very slowly.
Yeah, he made it to like just over 3 feet, I think, by the time of his death.
Yeah, he died at 45 of a stroke, and he was 3.35 feet tall, but grew so slowly. I mean, he was General Tom Thumb, very famously.
Right.
Renamed General Tom Thumb by his half-fifth, twice-removed cousin, P.T. What does that stand for, even?
Paul Thomas Anderson Barnum.
So he said, you know what? This is great. You are a small person and you're cute as a Dickens. So let me dress you up in little adult suits and you're my new sidekick.
Yeah. He collaborated with the kid's dad and said, let's make some money. And he taught him how to sing uh-huh. and dance.
Yeah.
Pretend he was Napoleon.
Yeah. He did impressions.
Cupid. He played Cupid sometimes.
Sure.
And then he told everybody that this little 5-year-old kid was actually 11, which
yeah.
made it all the more astounding that he was that small.
Which he didn't even need to do.
No. And then for about the next like 15 or so years, turned Tom Thumb into what was essentially the first international celebrity.
Oh, was he the first international celebrity?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah. Tom Thumb was a sensation.
Yeah.
Queen Victoria was a huge fan. Met with him twice, at least twice. She apparently was really big into sideshows, but Tom Thumb was her favorite. And they made so much money off of their first European tour that Barnum bought his museum with the proceeds.
Is there anything grosser than the Queen of England laughing at a small person imitating Napoleon? For money?
She may have even known Napoleon at the time.
Oh, I'm sure. That probably made it all the funnier
yeah.
to her.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, but he was a rich dude. He was paid in today's dollars.
Who, Tom Thumb?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Over $4,000 a week and retired and lived the high life in New York City. And, you know, he didn't feel like he was exploited.
No, he actually got married. I saw that he had children, but I only saw that one place. I didn't see it anywhere else. But he was married, and actually, right after the marriage was brought to the White House to hang out with Abraham Lincoln and Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, he had 20,000 people at his funeral.
He was a very big deal.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, at the end of the day, he shed his persona. He was just Charles Stratton. Uber wealthy, little person.
Yeah.
And when he was doing his show, he was Tom Thumb, who would dress up as Napoleon or whatever and take your money.
Yeah.
But, he and P.T. Barnum together really made a ton of cash. Tom Thumb was a little better at managing his cash than Barnum was because Barnum fell on hard times. A lot of people don't realize this, but he made some actually really bad investments over time too.
Yeah, he invested a lot of his money initially back into his business, which was smart.
Right. And but a lot of times he would be like, this is going to be a hit, and it wouldn't be a hit. He didn't have the Midas touch necessarily, and he fell on hard times more than once. One of the times, Tom Thumb or Charles Stratton bailed him out.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I get the feeling Barnum didn't know when to leave well enough alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like he had a big thriving business and he just kept wanting to push it further and further.
Sure.
Hugh Jackman, I'm telling you. So now we will talk about a couple of people, who are afflicted with something, they were, microcephalic, which means that they have a cone shaped head.
A smaller than normal shaped head as well.
Yes. If you're a Howard Stern fan, mm-hmm. then you know Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
He has this condition. They used to call them pinheads back in the day.
Yes.
Awful term.
Right.
And there were a couple of notable, I'm not even going to keep saying that, but a couple of notable people that performed, in these freak shows. One was, Zip, William Henry Johnson, renamed Zip, Z-I-P. He's from New Jersey, born to newly freed slaves. And, when Barnum found him, he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make up the story that you, were found during a guerrilla expedition, near the Gambia River. I'm going to shave your head except for a little ponytail tuft on top. I'm going to dress you in a suit of fur, and you get up on that stage and grunt like an animal.
Yeah. He was paid $1 a day at first to not talk, to grunt, and I guess to play the violin really badly.
Yeah, I didn't get, was he paid $1 a day?
To start.
Oh, okay, I thought that might have been part of the story.
No.
But he was, in fact, paid $100 a day.
Later.
Okay.
He became a very popular freak, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing is William Henry Johnson, was probably not microcephalic at all. Microcephalic is totally different.
Yeah.
Microcephalic. They think now that he had just like a slightly abnormally shaped head that was exaggerated by the haircut that they gave him.
Oh yeah.
And that he actually had no diminished mental faculties at all. And he was just pretending the whole time and not only fooling crowds, but he was also fooling promoters.
Yeah, because that's one of the hallmarks of that condition is, I believe, that usually it's accompanied by stunted cognitive development.
Yeah, usually very severe.
Yeah, but not in his case. He was super smart, and when he died, said, we fooled them all.
Yeah, that's
to
what
his wife.
No, his sister.
Oh, his sister.
On his deathbed.
They were also married.
Right.
Not true. No. So he made a lot of money, too.
He did. He apparently retired with millions.
A millionaire.
So he's not the only... Again, pinhead is what this specific type of freak was called. Man, I can't believe I just said that. This feels so wrong.
I know.
But there's a very...
Maybe sideshow performer.
Okay. And Chuck, another very famous sideshow performer who was also, I guess, technically under the umbrella of pinhead,
uh-huh.
who actually was microcephalic,
right.
was Schlitzie.
Yes.
Schlitzie's one of my favorite people of all time.
Yes, Schlitzie, they don't know for sure his real name, but they believe it's Simon Metz,
mm-hmm.
born in 1901 in the Bronx. And by all accounts, from everyone who ever met Schlitzie...
Everyone.
...loved Schlitzie, and he was a ray of sunshine
yeah.
and a nice, sweet, caring, kind-hearted man.
Yes. Loved life. Anything that you would take for granted... Schlitzie probably enjoyed the heck out of. And he was very frequently billed as a woman. I think he was billed as an Aztec warrior at first, and then maybe even an Aztec woman. But he wore dresses all the time because he was incontinent.
Yeah.
And this just made it the whole thing easier.
Yeah.
So he was billed as a woman for a very long time, and including in the movie Freaks, the Todd Browning movie from 1932. Schlitzie was in that, and Schlitzie actually has like this big scene that's like he has a whole speaking like a dialogue section,
oh, yeah.
but to this day no one has any clue what he says.
Yeah, should we talk about Freaks now or take a break and then talk about it?
Let's take a break.
All right.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month. Hey friends, if you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Learning stuff with Joshua.
All right, so the movie Freaks, I've seen it. Have you?
I saw it for the first time this morning.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I saw it in college
it.
When
Man,
most people
it.
See it.
So good.
Yeah, it's a 1932 pre-code film. There was a time between 1929 when they started making movies to 1934 when the Motion Picture Production Code kicked in.
The Hays Code.
Yeah, and properly called the Hays Code. For 5 years there, you could do whatever you wanted, I guess.
Yeah.
And, that's when this director named Todd Browning made a movie called Freaks about sideshow performers. And this guy was, he actually ran away. The director actually ran away and joined the carnival when he was 16 mm-hmm. and worked as a carnival barker and even, participated in stunts, and he's a circus guy.
Right, and he had a lot of sideshow performers as friends, and you can tell in the movie that's whose side he's on.
Yeah.
They're the heroes of the story.
Yeah,
they're the protagonists.
Yeah.
The antagonists are normals or whatever.
Right.
It's a really morally fraught movie these days, but
sure.
If you just step back and think of it as like this guy having an affinity for sideshow performers and giving them a shot at stardom,
yeah,
being on the big screen for what they are, for who they are, for what they can do, then it's a really kind of a heart-growing tale.
Okay, heart-growing?
Yeah, in a very weird way.
Interesting.
It's wrenching to watch. When's the last time you saw it? College?
Yeah. It's been a long time.
You should see it again.
All right. I'll check it out.
Like, it's tough to watch. It's gut-wrenching.
There are a lot of, let's just talk about some of the performers in the movie. One of them who stands out is Johnny Eck, John Eckhart Jr., who was a twin, and he was born with a condition. Everyone said that he was cut off at the waist.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly true. He actually had unusable, underdeveloped legs that you never saw.
Hmm.
But it appeared as though he didn't have anything from the torso down.
Right.
And as from a young kid, I believe he was even walking on his hands before his twin brother was even standing.
Oh, really?
So he was very advanced in a lot of ways. A very smart guy.
Oh, he's a painter?
Yeah, very accomplished.
A magician?
Uh-huh.
And he had a great personality, too, you could tell.
Yeah, and apparently he was good buddies with Browning. And Browning always wanted him around and by his side and was like, you know, you need to come sit with me by the camera.
Uh-huh.
And, almost like his, I don't know if he like could consider him a co-director, but he always wanted him nearby.
Huh.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
Daisy and Violet Hilton.
Yeah, conjoined twins, right?
Yeah, which they called Siamese twins back in the day.
Thanks to Chang and Ang Bunker, right?
Yeah. They were actually some of the first super famous. They were from a Siamese fishing village,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the term came from.
Yeah, Siam was what we now call Thailand.
That's right. And Chang and Ing were born in 1811, and they actually performed on their own for many years.
Yeah.
Made a ton of money.
Right.
Got married, had kids.
Moved to North Carolina.
Yeah, of all places. And interestingly, Daisy and Violet ended up in North Carolina too.
Huh. Oh, yeah, but under much, much worse conditions.
Yeah, but to finish with Chang and Ing, they eventually lost their money. They were millionaires, lost their dough, and then worked for Barnum later on in life.
But I get the impression that they did it kind of like at their leisure almost and ended up reamassing another fortune.
Oh, interesting.
From working with Barnum. Yeah, and they fathered 21 children between them, married a pair of sisters.
Man,
who were not conjoined.
Yeah.
They each had a house, and they would spend 3 days at one house, 3 days at the next house. And, yeah, they had 21 kids.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So Daisy and Violet Hilton, they were known as Siamese twins back then. Of course, we don't use that term anymore. But, I mean, I remember that term when I was a kid.
Sure.
So it's definitely, like, held on for way too long.
Mm-hmm. Remember Ronnie and Donnie Galleon?
Oh, yeah. Are they still with us?
Let's find out.
Go ahead. You're checking that. I'll continue. I believe that that Browning spotted Daisy and Violet and said, you guys are great. You're pretty. You can sing. You'll be a big part of my movie. And they had been performers all along. By 18, they were on tour with Bob Hope as part of his dance troupe and made quite a bit of money. But sadly, their story ends in North Carolina because they made an appearance in 1961 at a midnight showing of Freaks at a drive-in,
mm-hmm.
and their manager ditched them. And at this part I don't get. They had no way to leave North Carolina, so they just stayed there?
Yeah, they had to get a job.
That just seems odd to me.
If you don't have any money and no one to call to ask for money, you go get a job at a grocery store and hope that you can live.
And eventually die there?
Yeah.
It seems like they would have gotten enough money to leave and go back to wherever they lived. Well, they died in Charlotte, North Carolina of the Hong Kong flu.
What is that?
It was a flu epidemic.
Jeez.
That originated in Hong Kong.
It was a different world back then. Siamese twins died of Hong Kong flu.
I know. None of that seems politically correct to say.
No, it doesn't.
Who else was in Freaks?
Let's see. There were a pair of little people named Harry and Daisy Earls, and they played Hans and Frieda, right?
Yeah.
And Hans is like the ringmaster of the sideshow. And Frieda, in real life, Daisy was known as the Midget Mae West. And in the movie, they're engaged, but actually in real life, they were a brother and sister.
Yeah, and they were in The Wizard of Oz, even, as Munchkins. And we're in a bunch of movies with Laurel and Hardy as well. So lifelong performers.
Yep. So this whole movie, and again, we didn't finish with Schlitzy. Schlitzy was in it too and had his whole big speaking part. And was just adorable in the movie.
Yeah.
You could, like, Schlitzy's personality just shines right through the movie.
Yeah. Very likable.
Yeah. And, Schlitzy was actually, adopted. No one had any idea who Schlitzy's biological family was.
Right.
They were not around. So the people he performed with and worked for actually took care of him. And when his adopted father died, his father's daughter, biological daughter, said, "Hey, Schlitzy, I'm going to commit you to an asylum in Los Angeles."
Yeah.
And that's where Schlitzy was until one day, just by total chance, Chuck, another circus performer, I think a sword swallower, right?
Yeah, named Bill Unks.
Bill
said, "You're Schlitzy."
Yeah, what are you doing here? You look so sad. And Schlitzy was like, "I remember you. Let's go." So Bill Unk intervened and got Schlitzy out of the institution, and he got to live out his days hanging out in the park, being recognized by passersby.
Yeah, he lived near MacArthur Park in downtown L.A.
Mm-hmm.
and lived all the way up until 1971.
Yeah.
At age 71.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You got to see Schlitzie. You should see Freaks, but even if you don't see Freaks, like, look up Schlitzie's part.
Agreed.
It'll probably make you want to see Freaks. So, Chuck, the Freak Show is, well, some people say that it's still around and that it's just on TV in the form of reality shows.
Yeah.
Like, basically, that same sentiment and everything still is found all over television.
Yeah, exploiting people, exploiting obesity and exploiting dwarfism. And,
sure.
Yeah, it's on television now.
But the actual sideshow itself, it went away in a lot of ways, at least as far as like a traveling sideshow went. And it went away with the rise of, the rights for the disabled, that movement that came along starting in about the like late 19th century, early 20th century, and then really gaining steam by about the time Freaks came around the movie.
Yeah, there were a few things that kind of killed it. But one was definitely, like you said, science invented it and killed it. And here's something that, is sort of reprehensible that I found out is that a lot of these, sideshows would try and keep doctors away from the people.
Yeah.
Because they thought, I don't want a doctor coming in here and saying that the dog face boy actually has hypertrichosis.
Yeah.
And it's a condition where you have hair all over your face.
Yeah. Because I told everybody he was a caveman.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you know actually there was another, there was a woman named Julia Pastrana, and she had hypertrichosis too, and she ended up marrying her manager. They were married, they had a baby together, and she died during childbirth, and the baby was born stillborn, and her husband manager, who ostensibly loved her, said, "Show must go on."
Yeah.
So he mummified his wife and their stillborn baby and then took them around to display them.
Wow.
In the sideshow as ever.
Unbelievable. So, again, doctors would come along and start explaining these things, and that helped kill the sideshow. Mm-hmm. The rise of television and, at home entertainment meant people weren't going out to places like sideshows anymore.
Yeah.
They could stay in their house and watch television.
And apparently you could still find sideshows like that American Horror Story. Was it Freak Show?
I think so.
Last season or whatever.
Yeah, I don't watch that, but yeah.
It was set in, I think, the 50s. And I think at that time you could still see, traveling sideshows here or there, but they were pretty broken down.
Oh, yeah. By that point, they were pretty much gone.
But by the 60s, there was a girl named Carol Browning, and all I could find was that she had deformed arms and legs. I don't know what that means, but that was the description that was given of her. But she went to a sideshow when she visited the carnival in North Carolina. I think she lived in Raleigh. And Carol.
What is it with North Carolina?
That's where things begin and end.
Wow.
with sideshows. Well, Carol Grant, I think was her name. Carol wrote a letter to the Agricultural Commission. And the Agricultural Commission is in charge of sideshows at the time, at least in North Carolina, and said,
"Yeah,
this is wrong. Like, this is beyond wrong. I'm offended by this, and this should not be allowed to happen." And she actually sparked a national conversation about whether sideshows should be allowed to be around, even if performers wanted to be a part of them. And that was the final death knell, that conversation. But a lot of people came out and said, "Hey, you know what? These people, you guys call them freaks, but you also empty your pockets to them."
Right.
And they're wealthy. They enjoy the acclaim. They enjoy the money.
Right.
And, it's actually you who has the problem.
Right.
And it didn't have much of an effect. Sideshows went away, and a lot of the sideshow performers ended up going from being pretty wealthy or well paid or having a steady income to, being broke and ending up like being abandoned by their managers, like Daisy and Violet.
Yeah. It's a tricky ground.
It is. It's pretty much sad all the way through.
Yeah, except
for some success stories.
Sure.
And that makes the whole thing so morally ambiguous if you think about it. Like, it's just so easy to look from here and be like, "You named your movie Freaks?"
Right.
Or you charge people to look at the Elephant Man?
Yeah.
But what about those people who said, I'm cool with this. I'm signing on for this.
Yeah.
This is making me very wealthy.
Sure.
I'm happy. I've had all sorts of opportunities that weren't open to me before, and I love what I do. What do you do about that? Like, you can't condemn it. It's not an easy black and white thing to deal with.
Yeah, it's called a moral ambiguity. You said it, that there have always been those.
Them moral ambiguities.
There always will be.
You got anything else?
No.
If you want to know more about sideshows, freaks, that kind of thing, you can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said search bar, it's time for listener mail.
Hey, before listener mail, what about Ronnie and Donnie?
Oh, yeah. Ronnie and Donnie are alive.
Awesome.
They are 64 years old this past October, I think, 21st. And they are the world's longest living conjoined twins.
Wow.
They're adorable, too.
They're Ohioans, right, if I remember?
I believe so, yeah.
Very nice.
Man, what documentary did we see on them or something?
I can't remember, but we've talked about them a lot over the years.
Yeah.
So that's great news.
Yeah, but they're still at it.
All right, so listener mail. I'm going to call this one quick feedback on the Bill Gates podcast.
Ooh, that is quick turnaround.
Hey, guys, my name is Brendan Cologne, pronounced like Cologne, and I'm a PhD student at Harvard Medical School in Pamela Silver's lab working on artificial photosynthesis.
Shout out Pamela Silver.
How about that? I'm a longtime fan of the show and wanted to say what you guys did. You did a great job covering renewable energy with Bill Gates. During the episode, there was a question about the current limitations of artificial photosynthetic systems. At present, the biggest issues are scalability, the cost of energy in producing the building materials, and the efficient extraction of produced fuels. These are standard engineering hurdles, but like Mr. Gates said, we can call him Bill, by the way. I don't think you can, Brendan.
We can't.
But we can. These are standard engineering hurdles, but like Mr. Gates said, the final product needs to be viable. Specifically, such a product would need to harvest and store more energy in the short term than what was required to build it. Makes sense. And do so on the cheap. Fortunately, biotechnology and photovoltaic technology is advancing at a breakneck pace, so the future of this technology looks bright. As new biochemistries are discovered, more products will be available for production, and one vision of this technology is a local and individualized production of chemicals on demand. Hope this helps. Feel free to reach out. Cheers, Brendan.
Thanks, Brendan.
Yeah.
Brendan Cologne, pronounced Cologne.
That's right.
If you are an expert in something that we talk about, we love hearing feedback from people like you. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota bZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.